There's a modern problem we Christians have been dancing around for about 150 years. When Charles Darwin first published his book, The Origin of the Species, in November 1859, the field of evolutionary biology was launched, challenging the traditional thinking about the world and our place as human beings in it. And while it has helped provide the means toward a God-deprived universe, that was not the original intention. In fact, Darwin was likely what we might call today a theistic evolutionist. Would you agree that we force ourselves into an unnecessary conflict when we always conflate the questions of how and when with questions of why and who? But for now, it's summer. The days are longer. We find ourselves outdoors more frequently. We break from periods of intense study, allowing time for more poetry than prose. We take trips upon mountains, cruise across lakes, and sit beside beaches. We know there's more work ahead to do, but we need time to renew, to refresh, to reconnect with our important relationships. Time to celebrate our place, our belonging, our connection, and our love for this wonderful home called Earth. An encounter leading us to great awe and an even greater humility. Walt Whitman offers this in "As I Ebbed with the Ocean of Life. As I went to the shores I know not, as I list to the dirge the voices of men and women wrecked, as I inhale the impalatable breezes that set upon me, as the ocean so mysteriously rolls toward me closer and closer, I too but signify at the utmost a little washed up drift, a few sands and dead leaves to gather and merge myself as part of the sands and drift, oh, baffled and balked, bent to the very earth, oppressed with myself that I have dared to open my mouth, aware now that amid all the blab whose echoes recoil upon me, I have not once had the least idea who or what I am, but that before all my arrogant poems, the real me stands, yet untouched, untold, altogether unreached, withdrawn far, mocking me with mock congratulatory signs and bows, with pills of distant ironic laughter at every word I have written, pointed to silence these songs and then to the sand beneath. I perceive I have not really understood anything, not a single object, and no man can. Nature here inside of the sea, taking advantage of me, to dart upon me, to sting me, because I have dared to open my mouth to sing. To draw close to nature reveals our truest and our most humble selves. My wife Donna and I sometimes struggle to find something worthwhile that we both want to watch on television. We have settled on reality TV. Survivor, Amazing Race, and only because I'm here among friends, I can admit to you, to add, naked and afraid. Now, I said that right. Naked, not naked. The difference, of course, being that naked means you have no clothes on. Naked means you have no clothes on, but you're up to no good. Right? I always check with the choir. You never know what they're doing back there. And if you haven't seen it, the show takes these two strangers that aren't strangers for very long, an Adam and an Eve, stripping them down to their birthday suits as they try to survive for 3 whole weeks in different and exotic locations all over the world. And we sit there in our comfortable home, enjoying a nice dinner, watching these fellow humans get ravished by bugs, deprived of food and shelter and sleep, and shiver and starve their grueling way through this 21 days of hell. Now, yes, I question my feeble morality to term such a show entertainment. Yet at the end, I always have 2 take-home points. First, why would anyone in their right mind put themselves through such an ordeal? And secondly, no matter how prepared you might think you are, or how well you are ready for the challenge, nature is always, always going to win out in the end. Even those who make it to Extraction Day have had the benefit of producers ready to alert them of super dangerous storms or to be there with absolutely vital medical attention if they get themselves into too much trouble or to point the way out with a map and a ride to get back home. Which brings me back to the dance. The dance between Christian tradition and modern science, between human frailty and nature's power, between our independent streak for personal significance and our absolute dependency on overwhelming forces beyond our control. Psalm 8 addresses God in awe and amazement. What are human beings that you are mindful of them, mortals that you care for them? You have made them a little less than God and crowned them with glory and honor, lower than the angels, rulers over flocks and herds and animals of the wild, birds of the sky, fish of the sea. All of that is due to the benefit of civilization. Drop any one of us in the middle of a jungle without many resources, all by ourselves, and it's likely most of us would not survive a fortnight. We love nature, and we are frightened by it. So Genesis chapter 1 has been read and interpreted in a certain way, a way that sanitizes it, wants to control it, wants to make it safe. We've read it to take control over nature and to make it friendly. And in so doing, we have perhaps also drawn false distinctions out of it, choosing light over darkness, dry land over the unruly sea, advancing men as more important than women, elevating the supremacy of humanity, as I might say and add, quite exclusively through hyper-macho men as the unrestrained authorities over all the rest of all the living, of all things. And yet, from God's viewpoint, all of this is declared good. The sunshine and the shadows, the surf and the soil, slimy things and solid things, the strong and the simple, sizable beast and microscopic specimens, all good, all special, all interconnected, all diverse, all unique. And so 7 times in verses 21 and following, we hear plants, trees, and fruit bearing of their kind, more and more. forgive me if it sounds a little bit like the plot line in The Origin of the Species. No doubt the most popular way we have told this story is by painting a continual progression of development, of ascending value. Each stage growing in importance, more significant than the one that preceded it, allowing for more and more complex creatures until the crown achievement for all creation is introduced. You and me, the whole of humankind. But we are stopped in our tracks at verse 26. At least I'm stopped in my tracks. We encounter an interruption. Instead of God said and things occur, we have this. As God says, let us make humankind. Up to this point, the story was this pattern. God speaks, creation. But now there's something different. A harmony, a fellowship, a relational suggestion, suggesting more than a single unified actor? Why the change? Many have taken a stab to explain it. Is this an earlier use of Elohim, a term springing from a primitive polytheism? Unlikely. The Hebrews are credited as the first monotheist. Is it an indication of a band of the heavenly host, a platoon of celestial personalities? Well, that seems to open up a Pandora's box of just more and more questions. And while later Christian insights concerning the nature of God as revealed by our Lord will see the Holy One to exist in a relational multiplicity within an overall unity, and while it's so tempting on a day like today, Trinity Sunday, to highlight this us as being the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, well, I have some caution. Asking that we show extreme care whenever we attempt to dunk the Hebrew Scriptures into our own private theology of our Jordan rivers, leaving the impression that the Scriptures speak more to our faith and tradition than to those who have brought it forward. So I did what many Baptist preachers with any sense do. I asked the rabbi. I highly recommend to every Baptist to have at least one rabbi and one priest that you can call upon to give you a broader understanding of faith tradition. And Rabbi David Warshafter first pointed me to perhaps the royal we, or the majestic plural, where a single person of high distinction, like a monarch or a sovereign, would be referred to in the first person plural. You watch The Crown, that's why the queen says, we. And you're like, where's everybody else? But then I watched him read the notes at the bottom of his Hebrew Bible and learned another approach. And that's to highlight the care and deliberation God offers when creating humanity. Instead of each thing evolving, if you will, there is a distinction at this point concerning humanity. The us represents a kind of me, myself, and I, where God is engaged in an inner dialogue of reflection, a long and careful consideration prior to making this major change in the plot. Finally, after all the movement, this spark of consciousness and potential responsibility is brought forward, and there is an amplified blessing at this particular point in this section, introducing humans. God says, very good. Carl Sagan, using modern timetables of how we understand cosmology today, said if we could squeeze the creation of the cosmos into a single year, then the Big Bang happened on January the 1st. The sun and the planets come into existence on September the 10th. Human beings arrived on the scene at 10 minutes before midnight on December 31st. Such a timetable puts us back into the dance, a dance far too many modern Christians find awkward, seeking to shrink wrap these major developments tightly into a 24-hour day, a seven-day sequence, reducing the mystery of life completely and neatly into a 6,000-year-old world and universe, tight little package. I'll not force such an exclusivity as a prerequisite for faithfulness. Silence screams against it. And I think so does the text. Does it really make sense for God to hold to a 24-hour day before the creation of the sun and the moon? I guess day one's up. It's 24 hours according to what? Or is it more appropriate to appreciate poetry of this wondrous account and hold to it a little less loosely? Indeed, with God, one day is as 1,000 years, and a day is 1,000. 1,000 years is one day. Can we add to that? It's blow your mind, maybe. For God, one day is as 1,000,000,000 years, and 1,000,000,000 years one day. You see, some dance with fluidity and harmony, and some dance by stepping on each other's toes. And so, I offer a novel suggestion. A suggestion that the us of Genesis 1:26 is also in concert with this million and billion year relationship that God has with all of creation. Long before we appeared on the scene. We are late arrivals, but we are not an afterthought. We are invited into a relationship that has been going on way before the time in which we arrived. A relationship that now we are able to have with each other, with God, and with a helpful and careful relationship with a beautiful world that God has provided. Our independence is an interdependence. It should not be cavalier or contemptuous. It is an affront to God to approach these issues without a deep reverence and call to a very profound responsibility. For there's two ways, as I close, that we can live our lives. Two main ways. One is to carve up the world into a series of binary oppositions, where male and female, mind and body, heaven and earth, spirit and matter, reason and instinct, neighbor and foreigner, industry and ecology, order and chaos, culture and nature, and many more, are placed in a dualistic relationship, forcing a choice. One is always positive, one is always negative. I fear most of Genesis 1 has always been read that way, a way to understand domination as exploitation and violence, and a way that just adds fuel, literally fuel, to the myriad problems of a world in distress. But I refuse to surrender. I refuse to suggest it's too late. I refuse to suggest that we can't make a difference even today. And so there's the liberating choice. I believe the redemptive choice. It's to seek a commonality, looking for ways we are alike, rather than defining all the ways in which we are different. A way that seeks balance and harmony and interconnection and mutual dependency. Accepting the insights of the other to be as privileged as the insights of the self. leading by serving, and using our potential to dominate as a means to protect and honor the good and the goodwill and the good possible. One way is a march. The other way is a dance. Which way do you prefer? Now let us stand as we sing our hymn of commitment, For the Beauty of All Good, For the Beauty of the Earth, hymn 14.